Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to the second episode of Drones, Code, and People. We are live recording from the GFBS Grand Forks Best Source Studios. I'm Dale Coolis, pinch hitting in for John Roberts today. He's under the weather. We wish him the very, very best. Joining me today is, to my left, Mr. John Ryan. Welcome.
Thank you.
Give you a crowd clap. The crowd clap in honor of John. And across from me is Tommy Kendall. Welcome.
Thank you for having us again.
Yes, yes. It's great to be back here for another episode of Drones, Code, and People here on GFBS and wherever you find Drones, Code, and People on their website and their social media apps. Big show lined up here today. A lot of stuff to cover, but I guess before we get into the thick of things here, how you guys been doing lately?
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. Pretty busy.
Getting ready for the springtime now that finer temps are here, right? Is there a thing called drone season? Is that springtime? People getting the drones out, stuff like that, getting them ready to go? Or is it all your
drone season for Tommy, for sure?
Yeah. We fly all 12 months, but up north here, obviously, you can longer days and better weather and things like that.
I guess, you know, it definitely helps with, you know, daylight savings last weekend, helping out, extend hours, actually feeling, and yeah, 50s, 60s, I am all about that. So much stuff to cover on today's show. I see on our, just kind of going down our agenda here for today, I see the first thing here is there was a North Dakota panel for the North Dakota Aviation Show that, Tommy, you were on. You were on a panel.
Yes, the state runs a great aviation network for regular aircraft, airport managers, things like that. And they moved the show around the state, and it was last week. It was called Fly ND. It was in Grand Forks, and myself and Mike Fridhoffs from Northrop and test site director Trevor Woods and then the director of the State Aeronautics Commission, Kyle Warner. We all, you know, we talked about how drones are coming into the airspace and how do we work with airports and things. So we had about 60, 80 people there. It was good. Good back and forth, good questions, things like that.
Was it like an all-day thing or multi-day, a whole weekend of festivities?
It was a multi-day event. But I only made it in the one afternoon. But yeah.
So you were on a panel then. What was it like a full hour, couple hours there?
Yeah, it was a full hour, and you know we had loaded questions that we sent in to, and they know them. I mean, they're all pretty abreast of the drone industry. So.
And that's got to be such a big deal then for the Grand Forks being hosting it for the sole event, for the big event for the year for the drones. I can only imagine that networking that must go on throughout the day there.
Yeah, it's good. You know, we can't lose our history. We wouldn't be here with drones if we didn't have a very strong airplane industry and aviation industry, whether it's UND or the fixed base operators, Fargo Jet Center or AvFlight or Crop Dusters. All those people had to agree that we wanted drones. And so we came up with the one voice thing, and we were one of the seven winners, the first, and now I guess the rest is history.
One voice. I was going to say that I'm kind of a little bit of a newbie to the drone. I've had friends that had drones. I kind of got a chance to test out a couple over the years. So one voice, can you maybe elucidate on that a little bit?
Well, with drones right now, we can only fly at 400 feet in line of sight. But we ultimately want to fly a lot further. Now, at a Grand Sky, they can take off and go in what's called restricted airspace and go. But smaller operators like us, we have to follow the aviation rules. And so I'm not sure all the early people that bought drones had their licenses and understood the rules. And so it's really important to follow the rules. It's really important that the aviation industry wanted drones. And now the Grand Forks base, the Fargo Happy Hooligans, small companies like mine around the state, you know, they're slowly coming everywhere. But
it's interesting you bring up following the rules and all that. This one person I follow on social media, they did a kind of like a little goofball segment for their show where they actually borrowed this from a sketch from a late night show where, you know, blindfold the guy, throw a dartboard somewhere in the country and they'll travel there. And they wound up in Fargo. And so the guy was kind of just like doing a bunch of shots, kind of doing like a little travel log video in Fargo. And he had a little drone with him. He went to do like a little aerial shot of Fargo up top in a hotel, and on his app it said you are in restrictive Hector Airport airspace. Yep. Are you guys used to hearing that from some clients over the years, restrictive airspace?
Johnny can cover it, and then tell him about your tether drone.
Yeah, you can. A lot of times you'll turn a drone on if it's a commercial or a just one you bought from Best Buy or that, when it updates, you know, it might say, well, you can't fly here. All of a sudden, as things update, or if your location updates and you're within restricted airspace, it won't let you take off. It'll actually block, you know, that flight from happening until you resolve it, or, you know, unless you have an approval that can override that. But there are other drones that fly on a tethered system. I'm a part of one that I helped develop, and basically it's it can fly up to 150 feet in the air with a tether. The tether is the power for the drones. There's no battery dependency. And basically there's a different subset of rules that they follow to be able to throw that in the air, you know, because it could be for security, monitoring borders, could be monitoring the fence system at a Air Force base, could be to, you know, monitor like a active shooter or something at a university. Heaven forbid that ever happened, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's different type of rules depending on if it's tethered, untethered, the size of the drone. I guess, you know, there's different categories there that you guys deal with as well.
Now, if say, yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, there's different weight categories, and we all operate in the under 55 pounds and under. We operate really right at 55 pounds with our big drone. But there's so many in between, you know. And then we've got the bigs out at Grand Sky and the bigs out at the Grand Forks Air Base. And so what's cool is we're doing them all in North Dakota, you know. Everyone's got a little different piece of the pie, and we're getting them done.
Now, I see also on here, on our next topics for our agenda here, that EyeSight, NDSU, Grand Farm, they won funding from the North Dakota Agriculture to locate the Pomerian weed in Cass County. I'm sorry if I pronounced that a little off there.
Well, it could be misspelled, too. Yeah, so we were part of a bid that won with the North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner and that team. And we already work with NDSU and Grand Farm and the test site. So, you know, it's cool because it helps industry. It helps the ag industry in North Dakota. So it's not a huge contract, but it's something new. It's something we'll see if drones can help. And we just got notified last week that we were selected. So it's good news.
All kinds of opportunities for EyeSight and the Hive to be a part of that. What any certain ways that the early plans for how to get involved in that? Johnny,
for which?
For winning the funding for North Dakota Agriculture to locate the you may have to help me out on this one. Oh my gosh, weed in Cass County.
But yeah. How do people find out about the Hive and their businesses that start?
How do they find out about the Hive? I mean, we have a lot of different channels that we kind of, well, we promote internally. Obviously, you're already a company if you know that. But we, you know, we have other events that we host. A lot of times we'll have, you know, just a UAS-related talk, and we kind of open it up to non-Hive members as well. We have some training coming in this week, in fact. MTSI, Modern Technology Solutions Incorporated, they're a beast in the drone industry, and they're flying in their trainers to actually to do their internal digital training, but offer it to some of our tenants and non-tenants and people that could kind of benefit from it. So cybersecurity, candy shell hacking, all types of things that people could definitely benefit from learning. And then on Thursday after that, we have quite the distinguished speaker. We have Mark Lindquist coming in. He's actually coming here from Ukraine, and he's going to give a talk on what he sees at the ground level. I mean, it sounds like, you know, if you're a week late on your information there, it's kind of dead on arrival just because things are innovating so quick.
It's interesting you bring up Lindquist. I was reporting that for our morning news here on GFBS that he just got back from Ukraine. Was a couple days ago or yesterday?
Yep.
After, was he 2 years there doing a bunch of humanitarian aid? That's got to be a huge, huge speaker opportunity for you guys.
Oh, absolutely. So he'll be here Thursday at the Hive speaking, and MTS is sponsoring that after our two-day training wraps up. And we tried to have him another time before. It didn't work out with the scheduling. But, yeah, I was FaceTiming in with him a few months back trying to set it up. And we had a mutual connection, set it up. And I didn't even make the connection at first when he said, this is my friend in Ukraine. And he saw I had a little Fighting Sioux thing in my coat. And then he said, I'll be right back. And he came back with a jersey on.
Oh, gosh.
And I thought, oh, no, I recognize this guy.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
Johnny, I see on our next topic here, you got the scoop for us on the latest Hive tenants.
Sure, latest Hive tenants. We have we have a renovation going on right now where a few of our current tenants are kind of committing to more space, more dedicated space for them. We have a private custom suite that we built for Grand Sky. So Grant Sky's already a tenant, but they'll be taking more space, and they've hired a couple new people. Scott Myers will be working out of there as their engagement engineer. And then, and basically, they have their own kind of private war room, boardroom, if you want to call it that, space within their office that you can only get to from inside their office. And then next to that, we have Sekisui Aerospace is coming into that space. We have Metalark Aircraft, one of our current companies, is going to now commit to a very large space. And before they were kind of a one-man band with just a flex membership. Now they're going to have three or four full-time employees there and probably 1,200 square feet. And then we have Praxis Consulting Group is coming in there with four offices. And so they're going to have a very nice suite there. And then we'll have we have a few kind of individual members that have been just kind of floating around here and there for a few months. Now they'll commit to full-time offices and some outside ones as well that we're kind of waiting to disclose.
That's a lot of new tenants coming in and going here in the last several months. Did it take a lot of logistics behind the scenes to get it all just, you know, or a lot of people requesting certain venue space to work with?
I think the biggest advantage that we've had is, you know, we started small. Tommy was one of our first tenants. Detect Radar was one of our first tenants. Aerial, as well as Grand Sky. So to be able to get the right tenants first and build that kind of core foundation, you know, it's a lot easier than to attract the right tenants after that. And now, I mean, we have a pretty intense application process now where, like, you have to be seriously legitimate in the UAS and or related industry to even be considered. I mean, we've probably passed on about 17 now companies and said, you know, you're a great company, most likely, but it's just not for us. And, you know, there's other space in town, the Center for Innovation or the 701 downtown or some other commercial real estate. So we like to keep it the way it is just so that that really cultivates the right kind of partnerships, collaboration, but also the respect between companies where, you know, people have really serious stuff that they need to work on all day, every day. And it's kind of like it's up to both parties to, you know, decide when they want to interact or overlap.
A lot of high demand space. You see all these new projects and developments going on in town. And I know in our local media today, they had a big write-up with Scott Meyer. Come on over to you guys. He's been huge in the Grand Forks community.
Yep. So Scott's coming over. He'll be just kind of a flexible tenant until we're done with the renovation. But the renovation should be finishing probably by the end of next month. They're a couple weeks behind, but there have been some changes for the good, and he's going to have a really awesome space. Kind of, if you saw what it looked like before, where the Herald was before, and you saw it now, even before construction is done, you'd be pretty amazed at what, you know, creativity has gone into it. And it's going to just give more life to that area. 4th Street is really just, and 3rd or and 2nd Avenue is just really taken off, and I think that's the place to be, and it really makes it easy to, you know, have meetings where Grand Sky or Talus or EyeSight Drone Services, they can all meet quick and then they can go back to different spots and kind of get stuff done and then meet again and then get stuff done. And
I can only imagine the amount of anticipation that must be growing with you guys getting so close to this finishing line with the remodeling at downtown. I imagine people driving by downtown, they've probably seen all the construction cranes and all that this past year. That's got to be a good feeling for you guys as you get close to that finish line.
Yeah, and the interesting part is the construction cranes haven't really been for us at all. Ours have been, it's been a pretty quiet renovation for the second floor. I mean, once we finished the roof last summer, obviously that was a big project for us. That made a ton of noise, you know, and our tenants were so just understanding of, well, this is something we have to go through and we'll be better off for it. Now, the second floor renovation, I mean, there's been a handful of guys and gals coming through, but not a ton of noise. And every time I go up there, I'm kind of like, wow, you've already put a wall there before I could take a photo of there not being a wall there. You know, they're moving fast. And it's exciting to see. And really, like, our goal for the kind of the EDA and JDA, excuse me, Job Development Association, we were shooting to be 20% full on the second floor by the end of 2024, and I already have commitments from about 85% of the second floor space, and we added to that number too. We have two other spaces that we added, so you know, we're jam-packed and we're getting to full, which will be great. I mean, there's a lot of action down there. On any given day there could be, you know, 10 key players in some big project all there at the same time. And the next day it could be kind of quiet and people are in their offices working on their stuff and getting stuff done. And that's kind of the vibe that we like to create, but then open it up to, you know, really it's like the people that are passionate about just trying to get into this industry, even if they don't have the experience or the knowledge, just the desire to do that. I think everybody's pretty open to, hey, there's internships, there's opportunities. You want to learn about it? You want to be work for Tommy's guys for a month or follow them around, see what it's like? I mean, there's no reason there's not roles, even for just kids out of high school.
See, now, people watching the video version of the show here, we got a couple websites going on the bottom of the, floating around the bottom of the screen, hivegf.com, eyesightdrones.com. Are those good resources to go, or do you have references to go for people looking for those intern opportunities?
Yeah, so this we're about to hire an intern. I'm not sure if the application process is still open. I believe it is because we haven't started interviews yet. But, I mean, we already have 9 applicants for just the intern at the Hive, which is pretty amazing because we hadn't really posted too many places. But if there is people interested, you can email me. My email is jryan@grandforksgov.com. You can check out hivegf.com. If you just even looked at our LinkedIn, there's a ton of history of posts and promotions, and just you can kind of get an idea of, like, is this a place for you or not? And really, we're trying to get to the point where, like, our next level, okay, next phase would be being able to have enough stability where we have the right tenants. The right tenants can maybe take interns. Interns can maybe be from high schools. And we've had a couple high school events lately where they were just kind of blown away of, what is this place? You know, and kind of a few of them were inspired, like, can we just come do our studies out of here and learn what's going on here? And, you know, it's across the street from, obviously, the Harvard of high schools, so that's...
I like that callback. I'm a Central grad, so, yeah. Oh, gosh, maroon and gray, that's me, so, gosh, yeah. I like that analogy.
But more so getting all the high schools involved, yeah. You know, it's a little bit more difficult because someone has to manage that no matter what. And even with our the Hive, we basically operate 24/7 security, so we have high-frequency card readers at every door, even internally in the building, just because, you know, some of these companies might have... any given day, they could have $1 million in hardware in their private space, and we want to keep that secure. So if we have people coming kind of documented, unlisted for, like, events, we don't really know what's going on. And there's ways that we do that where we open the doors and we have people tracking who's coming and going just to make sure that we're respectful of our companies if there's some after-hours event or, you know, things like that. But
needless to say, security is paramount with you guys.
For sure.
Now, I see here you guys had an interesting trip to, Mr. Wonderful had an interesting trip to Miami for one of our topics here for today.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to Miami today at 5. So,
oh, gosh.
That'll be interesting. I wasn't quite sure.
Got the bags already packed, heading right to the airport?
Almost packed, yeah. But, basically after their last trip, they invited me to come out. There's a couple other North Dakota founders coming out. And basically, it's just a learning event. They have all their Shark Tank and O'Leary Venture companies that they partner with. And it's basically like a 3-day kind of half-hour segments of people just presenting from their company, how they got acquired, how they grew, how they scaled, how they use AI, how they use machine learning, how they use different commercial products like Meta to further their business, how they use pretty much anything. And so, I don't know, my background is coding, software, hardware, kind of get into everything and but more so the drones is probably my reason for being out there, just be a conduit to Grand Forks and what kind of UAS opportunities there are. So
kind of going hand in hand with what we were talking about a little earlier at the aviation show, just networking and just promoting and getting the word out there about you guys, right?
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty confident at this point, you know, that Grand Forks is the number one place to be. Not just, there might be stats for other states for different various things, but I don't see it getting to the level anywhere soon that Grand Forks is. And this is with us not really talking about it. So, I mean, this is like, you kind of have to be here to see it and to believe it. And basically there's technology here that you can't get other places. There's partnerships that would take 15 years at other places to develop, like what Tom Sawyer has done with Grand Sky. I mean, you can't just show up to Air Force bases and start partnering right outside their gate. You know, that just isn't going to happen. And it's never, and looking forward with the current climate of the world, that's just not going to happen. They're going the other direction, and Tom and Grand Sky have been able to go in the partnership direction, which is amazing.
Yeah, it seems more and more, like this past year especially, I've been hearing more and more that, and over the many past years too, with UND Aerospace and the drones, everything you guys are doing with the drone business here this past year, and just having these opportunities just grow the Grand Forks for the whole country, just being bigger and bigger.
Yeah, so. we've had, prior to some of the recent announcements that, partnership opportunities that they're having out with Grand Sky, you know, we were already getting a ton of attention from outside states, outside companies, and people showing up here, networking, reaching out. You know, I'm getting reached out to all the time about, hey, you're going to be at this conference. You know, I obviously can't get to all of them. I'd like to. It's just that's too difficult. But basically, it's like, hey, we're interested in the Hive. We've heard about this thing going on, and we want to be a part of it. And they know, like, this isn't just office space. This is like, this is a community of, you know, people that are very busy, that work very hard, that maybe aren't as available over email or a phone call because they're just busy. So for, you know, things to happen, you kind of have to be there in person to be there at the right time and kind of seize the opportunity.
Goes a long way then. I mean, it's nice to have, you know, phone calls, emails, Zoom, all those options, but it goes, goes so much more to show that you guys are going above and beyond to be there in person, especially for these big conventions.
Right. And I think a lot of privacy revolves around, you just never quite know who's watching your cameras, you know. As I look around at 10 cameras in here.
10 cameras zooming in on a live stream.
But in all seriousness, it's like a lot of these conversations are only going to happen live in person between certain people. You know, like Tommy's a guy that likes to sit in person and talk about things, not blast it over text to everybody. Because you can't move at the speed you need to move, because these things are changing so often that, like, legislation changes, FAA changes, financial things change. I mean, unless you're meeting in person every couple of days, it's kind of hard to get the ball, keep it moving.
And the interesting thing, too, at these conventions, too, whether it be this one this coming weekend in Miami or this earlier in the month for you, Tommy, at the aviation show, you never know who you'll bump into and what kind of opportunities may run into from all the networking you do. Have either of you have, like, maybe an example that comes to mind for maybe a connection you made at one of these conventions from the past that just led to all kinds of opportunities that you never would have dreamt of before?
Mine was in my past career. There's a Hilton Garden Inn in this town, and I was close friends with one of the larger donors, and we taxied up to the Oshkosh Air Show in his jet. He introduced me to Baron Hilton, and 4 minutes later, we're building a hotel.
All in the course of 4 minutes?
Maybe
wow.
Maybe six.
Oh, gosh.
I'd already done quite a bit of money with this gentleman. He trusted me, and then I went to the air show as his guest. And he's fancy at that air show, and we literally taxied up next to Baron Hilton's drone or jet, and we went in to meet him, and bam, a few minutes later, we're meeting with the developers, and Mr. Ray laid out in front of them exactly what he was going to do, and that was my first time hearing it, and 11 months later, we had people staying here.
Wow. Hey, crowd clap for that. What a, wow. Gosh, you never know. Yeah, just 4, 5, 6 minutes, and all of a sudden, hey, let's make a hotel. Wow. Now, it's interesting. We bring up Miami. I see that that EyeSight had a booth in Miami last week there, and that sounds like things went pretty interesting.
Yeah, so we try to fish where the fish I want to catch are, and one of our partners is in Tampa, and they have obviously a lot of disasters in Florida. And so we have enough crew that we can send 6 or 8 to Florida tomorrow morning and help with a disaster. And so a couple of my guys thought this was going to be a good show, and the young man that was at it was in yesterday, and I said, let's run through who you met. And I knew a couple of the dozen that he met, but some really good leads, and we get our name and we get North Dakota out there all at kind of once, and the young guy didn't mind being down there at spring break either, so, you know, it all went well.
Oh gosh, all kinds of you heard back from him, and he was it something like you heard from him? I'm like, oh, how did it go? And well, let me tell you.
Yeah, no, he's a really good pilot of ours, Nate, former military, went to UND, helicopter pilot. We gave him an opportunity. I think he's on his third year. Wow. But does a great job for us, and he leads that area of our business.
He's the best-dressed drone pilot in North Dakota, isn't he?
I don't know.
Marquee model through and through, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Now, you know, I guess, you know, speaking of, you know, pilots and representing you in certain parts, I see that you wanted to go over one of the topics for today, the hiring of pilots.
Yeah, I mean, the hiring of people and where are they good from and who, what level of training should they have? We hired almost 100% of our pilots from UND the first 5, 6 years. Now there's more competition in our own neighborhood, and then the airlines were hiring, so most of our pilots have their man pilot license. We lost some to manned aviation, which I'm not mad that they left, but they wouldn't have left, you know. But they had a great opportunity, And some have come back. Some stayed with the planes. But I get it. They like airplanes first and drones second. But now we can get pilots out of Wapanin School of Science or NCTC, you know, smaller schools like that that don't have all the man flying but have their drone license, you know.
With having more schools and more, you know, planes and another, you know, I don't want to say a competition being the right word, but maybe one of the first words that come to mind, just are you having just discovering, seeing more new applications come through where you see all this experience and, well, maybe like you were alluding to a little earlier, I hate to see people go, but seeing all these new applicants come through, well, see, being like, wow, look at all this experience and how we could benefit off that.
A couple things that we do now is, I wish they all came from UND because that's where I went to school, but the market's changing. So we've had a post. We posted for 8 new pilots here 3 weeks ago. We had 70 applicants. Out of the 70, my hiring guys picked 12. I think they made offers to 7 or 8, and now you can work for us in Grand Forks, Fargo, Minneapolis, or Houston, or Oklahoma City. So some will come. And now we get them that they used to fly for Amazon or they used to fly for Google. And, you know, so we'll see. I like the kids from the Midwest the best. They seem to understand how to work.
Well, there's that. I heard it kind of referred constantly over the years as stereotype, but, you know, there seems to be a lot of proof to the pudding, as the adage goes, that, you know, the hard work ethic of the Midwest.
They're still not perfect by any means, you know. Early to them is maybe the crack of 9:30. That's a little frustrating for me, but they're very intelligent young professionals, and also many of them were their first job. So we have to bring them along too. Just because they can fly doesn't mean they can do the other half of their job. So we have to coach, and my general manager, Doug McDonald's, really good at that. I'm somewhat good at it, but we haven't had too much turnover. We're going to have a record year this year.
That goes to say a lot to have such a huge retention rate, just to have, you know, they come in with some of the background circles checked there and just to see where you guys could pick up and hone whatever edges that need to be honed.
Yeah, we had a couple people here a couple week or two ago that were in training and quit because it was too much work. I'm like, come on, man.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen doing technology stuff, various roles alongside drones. You know, I've built drones, but usually I kind of stay away from flying them. That's, you know, for other expertise. But I was down south once with Grand Sky, with Tom Sawyer, invited me down there. And there was, you know, Tommy's company was there, and they had all their right drones, all their checklists, all their safety equipment, you know, their safety vests and the cones that they set up, and kind of, you know, over the top. At the time, I thought it was over the top of the time for the safety, and then I realized it's got a huge purpose. And basically, the other company that showed up wasn't UND pilots; it wasn't commercial pilots turned, you know, drone heads. They were just kind of into drones. And Tommy's chief pilot, there was supposed to be a demo right next to this restricted airspace. It's in this landfill. There's, I mean, all these elements. That's why we're down there, to see like who could fly, who couldn't. And Tommy's chief guy said, there's no way this guy's drone's going to take off, kind of like what we were talking about earlier. And so once he fires it up, it's just going to brick. Just watch, you know. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, does this guy know what he's talking about? And sure enough, the guy, you know, there's 10 cowboys with cowboy hats, big oil executives waiting to see this drone fly.
Moment of truth.
And he turns it on, and it does the beep, 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 and then just, you know. And the kid's like, oh, sorry, hold on 1 second, you know. And then the clock is on of, like, this is uncomfortable when you have executives waiting to see a demo. You know, and our guy's waiting with his, and then finally he didn't call the tower, and our guy had already called the tower, you know, and that's a difficult thing to just, it's not easy to just call the tower and start talking pilot speak to, you know, the tower regulating all this stuff. That's not an easy task if you didn't go to commercial aviation school. So our kid can't get it going. Then finally he's about to think he's going to get it flying, and Tommy's chief pilot looks at me and goes, it's not going to matter. And I was like, why? What's that? He's like, he doesn't have a SD card in there. Oh. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, look, he forgot to put one in.
Oh, it's one of those smallest, simple pre-flight routine check. I'm sorry if I'm probably butchering the terminology myself here, but just one of those checklist items that they forgot to go over.
And he wasn't about to tell him. So, you know, it was kind of a competition mode. And, you know, ours, they ended up flying ours with over power lines, under power lines, the right way through a it was a battery factory that had blown up years past. And so there were so many signal interruptions and the FAA restricted airspace and the landfill. And Tommy's guys, you know, they knew in and out every single way to do every part of that.
Knew how to bob and weave throughout all the airspace, what was restricted, what wasn't.
Well, and just like, you know, sometimes you don't realize, okay, these are all signals. So if something blocks your signal, you never want to have the drone without a controller. Yeah. That's what the FAA is worried about, you know.
And that's got to be just to have like a almost like a movie moment like that. You know, here's the competition, and there, or maybe not competition, but here's one you're going up against, and there, you know, things just almost not, I don't want to say disaster, but just, you know, just running into tech glitches or errors, things didn't go their way, and then all of a sudden a flawless performance from your demonstration.
Yeah. Well, and you see when you run into like, you know, opportunities for a company like Tommy's out in different states, and you know, if there's hesitation around drones, that might be there. It might be, see, yeah, the CEO's nephew flew for us for a year until he didn't, until there was an issue, a situation, and he didn't go, you know, he didn't have part 107, didn't go the right way, wasn't regulated, you know, and something happened. And safety, it's always a safety issue. And really the biggest thing that North Dakota has as an advantage is North Dakota has forced the issue of what screw ups are going to happen. The more experience you have, the more knowledge, the more crashes, the more you learn. And that stuff, you can't just learn from a textbook. Like the first time you crash a drone, it really sticks in your head. You know, I've crashed one in my backyard on my tethered drone, and I could still hear the sound it makes and how startling it was. And when you're ready for that the next time, you really, really check everything, you know, 10 times over. And that's what you should be doing. And so when you see hesitation around drones, you know, a lot of times they've already maybe dabbled and kind of quit. Second time around, you know, there's other people out there that know what they're doing, and you know, there's endless possibilities for UAS technology, whether it's media or looking for, you know, these aphids in a field or something. Or
today we have 20 pilots in the air in probably 5 states, and we should fly south of 100 wind turbines today.
Wow.
Just today.
Would you say compared to like a year or a couple of years ago, that's a huge growth there from where you're at, or about?
We've been steadily, we're mm-hmm. within a couple pilots, but better drones. We're smarter on the ground. Maybe instead of being 100, I'd have 18 pilots out and get 70.
Right.
But the more we can do safely, the better it is, because then it frees them up for the next job, right?
That especially, it sounds like it's like when you see a drone pilot being from the Hive or EyeSight, that hey, here is our resume, here is our pedigree. It's first class all the way,
for sure.
And we can wear the Hive jerseys. If Johnny wanted to have a drone demo and hire us, I'll wear whatever shirt they want us to, as long as the job task is that we can do it safely. If he says buzz through all the offices inside the building, I don't need the FAA's help for that, but I'm not doing that.
Right, you know. Yeah.
Now, if he says, can you take a pictures of the roofs of the city building and the Hive building and the new building? Sure. You know, so yeah, each job is different. We do a lot of progressive construction. We do some ag. You know, we just kind of, they're all different, and we try to have a lead on each topic that knows what they're doing.
Do your proper research and development going into each project to make sure, you know, get all your, you know, your T's crossed, all your I's dotted, to, you know, make sure that everything is fully prepared, that you're all good to go in. Has there been a project where you're going into in the past where, you know, you're doing your research, you know, getting all your proper permits and whatnot, or all your routine checklists, and all of a sudden you're caught with like a sudden, oh, we got to do this, or we got to run this by who? Is there something like that comes to example where you're like, wait a second?
We've had people that want us to fly that we shouldn't be in the air. And then usually the lead pilot on the project makes that call. They let me know. They said no. And I back them every time, because we've lost drones over the years, a lot of them. One that's really memorable was the very first legal drone flight in the oil patch, maybe in Western Dakota, maybe 6 years ago. I don't remember. But my guys went out there and practiced a couple days early. We had a big oil company. We had the future lieutenant governor coming from, who was going to be North Dakota's lieutenant governor. I went out there and met the pilots at dinner, and they had pretty somber faces. They said, what's going on, boys? Well, we're not doing that demo tomorrow. dropped the drone today. I don't know what happened, but it's in shreds. And
oh.
And I said, well, we are doing that demo tomorrow. Here's my platinum card. Overnight, a new one here. Be here by 10:30. The demo is not till 1. And be ready. And so it took from 10:15 to 12:45 for them to build the right software into the new drone. Fancy new drone. I don't know which model.
Pretty much overnight delivered and programmed and on the spot.
The boys did great, and we got the project. And you know, but they weren't thinking like I was thinking. I'll pay $500 for delivery.
Yeah,
I already have more than that in this.
Yeah, you know? So, yeah, putting it all on the line and just showing that your crew went above and beyond to just deliver.
They figured it out, and everything went all right.
Now, you know, we're talking a little bit earlier about how you've been having employees based all around the country. I see that EyeSight has just opened up an office in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, one of my top guns, really, I think our number one pilot as far as revenue and hard work. He came to us and said he was thinking about moving, maybe Fargo, maybe Minneapolis. Well, Oklahoma City is kind of dead center in the middle of all of our work. Because we're in West Texas a lot. We're going to the east a few states, going north, obviously, all the way to the border, going west. So we picked that area because it's a one-shot flight from Minneapolis. It's also a 12-hour drive from here. And so we have 19 pickups on the road, and we have a rule that they can't drive more than 12 hours. So now we have a place to crash and pick up and exchange gear, exchange trucks, or exchange drones, and
makes it kind of like a convenient central hub or depot.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited that we opened his place in March. I haven't seen it yet, but that's fine. They know what to do.
Well, it just sounds like a huge just upgrade with everything. You just went down there. Nice pit stop, avoid the driver fatigue, and also get some work done along the way, and just like a nice like way just to get bigger and better with a strategic planned new location for you guys. That's got to be awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I see, I think we kind of went over this a little earlier, but just in case if we missed out anything, John, on the remodel for the Hive upstairs in the old Herald building there, was there anything else you wanted to touch on there that we didn't get a chance to earlier?
I mean, one of the biggest things with, like, you know, hearing Tommy talk about jobs is, like, you know, people don't realize, yeah, it may take a couple hours to go fly some job, but there's so much post-op work that has to be done. The more flights you have, the more days you are flying, the more media files, things, you know, things that need to be created, anything. It could be 3D models of something, could be some analysis for a farmer, could be some, you know, video marketing ad that takes a week long to edit. So, I mean, a lot of those things are, they take a ton of time, and there's a huge bottleneck around getting all that, getting all those files up to the cloud so that you can edit them, share them with your remote team. So basically we just switched. We're, up to 2 gigabytes per second upload now for our whole building. So, you know, a lot of people come in like Tommy's guys, and if they have a ton of media, you know, rather than take 9 hours waiting at a hotel, they can drive home, do it in 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and get back on the road.
Well, it's like now is it fiber internet? That's the latest and greatest new upgrades that's finally making its way around the country.
Yep, so ours is 2 gigabytes per second, 2,000 megabits per second, if you don't know what the 2 gigabytes is. And then just a comparison, like, you know, in Fargo, their tech center has screaming internet, and theirs is 400 megabits per second upload. So ours is 2,000, and we're even considering pushing that up. So, I mean, if it can save a commercial pilot a day every 7 days, that's huge. That means that, you know, in a month, there's 4 more days of flying for chief pilot for Tommy.
Less lag time, more productivity. You can't go wrong with that combo.
Well, and we have the opposite problem as most internet users. We need to upload big stuff. Download isn't as important to us as getting it up. So,
yeah, and upload. We've been really fortunate with Midco to have such a good partnership with them. But in other areas, you know, upload is what they know they got you for. So they might come to your house and say, "Hey, you know, in South Dakota, you might have 1,000 megabits per second download, but for upload, it's a guaranteed 20."
Yeah, wait, you know,
huge disparity. And they kind of just like hold you over the coals for that. And so for us to match those speeds to have 2,000 up, 2,000 down is, it's a significant financial investment for us, but we think it's worth it. Tommy's guys literally share my office. I rented half my office to their supercomputer, so he doesn't talk much, which is nice. And so that's for like data upload, you know, because and security. If you have encrypted fiber, you know, connection, direct fiber, I mean, some of these most of these hotels are just sniffing operations for your data. So it's slow, and they make it slow. And while you're waiting, someone's looking at all the data.
Wi-Fi connections.
Yeah, everything is, you know, being sniffed, and basically, like, it's 2 megabits per second, and it's insecure. So those are two kind of no-nos, you know, especially when you're dealing with infrastructure, which these guys do a lot.
Gosh, yeah, that's so cool to hear about all these upgrades coming, and just to, again, just being blown away by these internet speeds for you guys, and just all the opportunities that's going to have for the better upgrades down the line. I see here for our next topic here is a waiver for the hybrid was approved by the FAA for EyeSight there. That's got to be a huge approval to come your way.
Yeah, our company's been working on this for 3 years. It's our big drone, 12-foot wingspan, 7 hours in the air. And the whole state has invested heavily in this beyond visual line of sight with the test site and Vantis and groups like that. So we're approved for one of two FAA waivers. We don't have the exact waiver yet. Hopefully it's the newest, greatest, and best. And when we actually get that, then we're going to have a press deal at the Olive Ann. And obviously, since you guys are press, you'll be there. And
absolutely.
I'll invite everybody in the kitchen sink there. But the people that will put it on will be ourselves, the test site, and a company called Talus. So,
yeah, I need to add Talus to the list, or I'm going to get some crap. So they're one of our new, bigger tenants, but they took over a huge space on the first floor recently. So not the second floor renovation, but they're a part of the new group. And Greta has been great with that connection. She's made her office look great. And, you know, they're a part of the kind of the new phase two, if you want, of new tenants.
Now, one of two approvals there, is it a bit of a process for this to go through, the first one there? Or do they got, like, I can't even begin to fathom to imagine all the, you know, all the X's and O's they got to go through to get the approval to go through from people you've talked to or what they've briefed you on how long to expect it to go through?
Well, I mean, if you can imagine putting a car on the highway and follow all the rules to build a brand new car on the highway, it's that.
Right, right.
And then in the drone industry, because we're flying with aircraft, it's up to the drone to get out of the way. Where in a car, you know, it's kind of equally a problem. Well, in this, it's different. So we've flown thousands of flights to prove the safety, 130 hours of this. And so our aircraft is 100% American made. As Johnny mentioned, our people aren't bad. But it's been a lot of meetings and a lot of hard work by a lot of people, including our state politicians, legislature, helping fund that for North Dakota, our CODEL and D.C., all being on the same team about drones. So it's a big deal for all of us. We just happen to be the first service provider in the state to get this done. But it's a big deal.
Well, I'm going to give an early crowd clap for just, hey, that, like I said, just, you said you guys are going to be throwing a huge event there for whenever that approval goes through, and nothing but the best of luck on just all the huge amount of undertaking that must have been just to get this to go through and to be the first to do it. That's awesome. I guess speaking of EyeSight here, I see a huge news for EyeSight is the EyeSight app for tracking travel and the workload. You always hear about everyone having an app and just to have another app to go hand in hand with the drones.
Yeah, well, Johnny mentioned a little bit about the ecosystem, but because we've known each other, I knew what some of his skills were, and I was tired of using this off-the-shelf thing to figure out where my employees were, and I wasn't going to put sensors on the trucks either. But I want to know who you're flying for, what assets of mine do you have, what assets do you have of our clients, and how are things going? And I early on cared because I was like a parent. You know, all these kids are 21 to 25. They're all over the country with $150,000 worth of my stuff. How are they doing? Did you make it? You know? And then now I kind of watch the weather a lot, too, because we can go to where there's bad weather or go to where there's good weather. And so by this now, I can tell who's working, who's off, who's on. And so Johnny's built the app for us. My guys helped a little bit. And then hopefully in the next few weeks we'll go live with the beta and rock and roll.
Do you get all the testing in from the beta? Get a bunch. Is it like a closed beta, or can people like sign up to test for the beta for or is it more just in-house?
It's in-house for us, yeah, for now.
Gotcha. And that sounds like you don't got to worry about third party apps anymore. Just to be able to see more hands on deck, you know, internally. That's got to be just to have that peace of mind. That's got to be awesome. Now I see this. We're kind of winding down here. A couple last things to go over here. Future guests on future episodes of Drones, Code, and People. Anything that you can clue people in on for what to come for future episodes?
Yeah, I got a couple up my sleeve, but...
Go ahead, Johnny boy.
Well, I was thinking at some point we would get the O'Leary guys. Hopefully Kevin on here. That'd be great. Maybe we could do a live stream from Miami to here.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be cool. There's a esports company out of Norway that I just talked to that would love to be same thing remotely into our show. Obviously, we're going to have Tom Sawyer a few times, maybe partner on this with him, with Grand Sky. And then all of our tenants are pretty eager to be on the next show. So
I know the couple that you, when you ran down the list of some of the tenants in the building earlier, I know there's been some of them that have been in the GFBS studios before. Scott Meyer.
Yep, and Scott Myers. I think Greta's been in here probably before with Talis. KBR with Colonel Curry. Mike Friedhoffs has been in here with Northrop Grumman. Tom Sawyer, for sure, I'm sure, been in here with Grand Sky. And then we have Bill Daggett and his team, David Solomon, Scott Dan with MTSI. They'll be in town this week, tomorrow, at the training event. And then, you know, we got Jonathan Gierke with TSV. Just trying to go down the line here.
A lot of big guests coming on
Future Radar, shows. Ryan Walsh, Neil Ludwig with Ariel. And yeah, there's quite a few players.
So I'll let Johnny play with his tenants because he knows them better than I do. But I'd have a few of my pilots on when they're home. And what's the day in the life of working here? Somewhat as a recruiter to other young people to be listening. And then we'll get on quite a few of our politicians. Because if it wasn't for our politicians supporting our industry, our state and federal ones, so... You know, people like Emily O'Brien, you know, Scott can come on for one or the other reasons. A couple guy out in Bismarck, maybe Mike Nathy. And then Senator Hoven and Kelly Armstrong and Kevin, they're all huge supporters. So to have them on and get their view of our industry. And then also other companies that aren't in Grand Forks. I'm working with a company to build drones out of Fargo. Have them on. What's the ecosystem about? There's a drone company that sells components and does LiDAR in Bismarck. Have them on. There's some Williston and Minot associated companies. Lake Region at Devil's Lake does. So I'm kind of excited to have somebody on, and whether Johnny and I flip-flop or we, you know, we don't all need to be here, but we'll figure out the schedule and
get a rotation going.
I got to give a shout out to, his name's Josh Dingman. He helps me with a bunch of projects. I call him Willy Wonka. So he is the guy to talk code with, and I'm trying to get him up here in person to show up, and he wants to, but if not, we'll do it remotely. That'll be our code segment. I think we'll blow some people's minds with that.
Gosh.
He is very, very intelligent. He was messing with drones and HoloLens and things before people, you know, while people are in diapers. So he knows a lot about technology. AI, everything.
All kinds of future guests. It sounds like you guys got the whole spectrum here covered for the politicians or having staff on and fellow tenants, just to cover all the avenues, just to get a wide range of perspectives. I think that's going to be phenomenal, a bunch of future episodes in the works for you guys.
And there's some others. I mean, there's an awful lot of construction companies that benefited from Johnny, the mayor, and Johnny and the city redoing the Hive. There's a lot of companies that benefited out of Grand Sky. So it's not just about drone companies. It's, you know, how did you help the industry? You build buildings and you lay parking lots and, you know, and I think we could get some of those people on just as well, just to see what, you know, how it's gone.
Find out what roles that everyone from mm-hmm. all fields play, just helping you guys out. That's going to be huge. I am excited. I see we got a couple comments in the chat here. Alvin saying earlier, good afternoon, guys. And Zach Seeger saying, good work, guys. Do we have any update on BVLOS laws or beyond visual line of sight laws?
Is that from Seeger?
Yep, Seeger. Anything you can go into officially?
Well, our waiver, maybe you didn't catch that, but mm-hmm. the laws are getting written as we sit here. But we're going to have a waiver in North Dakota with our big airplane to go BV Lost this summer.
Oh, there you go. By this summer. There you go.
If he wants to come up to North Dakota, tell him we'll take care of him.
Hey, there you go. Tommy will hook you guys up there. I see on here, too, you're mentioning earlier Wonka being the your go-to for AI and code 101 there.
Wonka, yeah.
Yes. Our final segment of the show, code questions for Johnny. I don't know. Did you have, like, a specific maybe code topic in mind for today's show or just, like, a code tip?
No, not necessarily. I think we're just kind of teasing that right now, and then I'll get a guy on, like, Willy Wonka.
Okay.
Depending on if he's going by Josh or Dingman or Willy or Wonka that day, but... he and I had a lot of fun at Target taking off-the-shelf products apart at Target and rewiring them to do something else. You know, we were basically on the 26th floor of one of the downtown buildings overlooking Target Field. The other half was like the C-suite of Target, you know, and we were trying to take the elevator apart and put a Nintendo power pad. So if you didn't run fast enough, you couldn't go up the elevator.
Oh, gosh.
You know, and we'd take...
We've actually had the Nintendo Power Pad here on the show playing old Nintendo games a long time ago.
Well, and he and I, we'd get pulled into these teams. We were kind of the group of four or five that could deploy and build these things that Target normally doesn't get into. And one of the teams we got to was like, hey, we want to get in the connected lights space, you know, for Target. So we built this, you know, connected motherboard, and he and I built the app, and then we launched it, and everything worked. You know, it's like you can go buy these lights at Target, and it's Bluetooth. And then, you know, people in the app reviews just trash. Absolutely trash. I thought it looked pretty nice, but...
Well, that's got to be cool doing, you know, like, your own...
He did win a Webby Award, which he'd laugh that I said that.
But, hey, crowd clap for the Webby Award. Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, that's got to be cool. Like, you know, MacGyver it up, DIY, just as this home... Like, how creative can we get? And just to have that...
So this is one of the projects that I was so fascinated about that he worked on that I learned a ton. He got me into hardware and Raspberry Pis. And basically, Target wanted to do this food of the future thing, which was, I mean, really good intentions. Basically, he took this little Raspberry Pi computer, planted it in this box. We went to Menards one morning, and we're getting, like, you know, that silver thick wall, you know, insulation-looking stuff. He built some box out of that and then put a camera in it. And then we took one of the weights or the scales at Target for, like, food, and we took it apart, wired it to the scale. So when you put, like, an orange or an apple in, it takes a photo. It goes to the FAA. It figures out what fruit it is, takes the weight, and it spits out a live thing. These 32 grams of sugar exact. This is 14 grams of carbs. You know, so anybody with, like, restrictions for food could walk in and see exactly what they're getting.
Get all the right nutritional.
And so that was one of them. There was this other one called, like, a GrowBot, and basically MIT made this environment where you could grow anything you want in a box. You want to grow, like, pineapples and Grand Forks? Like, this box makes the environment. And it's all open source code, so you can take it and use it for whatever you want, right? Gosh. Obviously, there's limitless imagination on that, but
all kinds of possibilities. Let's see, we got another comment in the chat, Mary Stewart saying, "Wow, blowing minds all over." Imagine seeing that, just going to get groceries, and then just seeing all of a sudden drone come in and display all these stats, this nutritional information, and just wow, the future, future's here. I think we got through our agenda for the day. Is there anything I missed that you guys wanted to touch on today that we haven't yet?
Well, I think we covered most of it. This is exciting again. We're just kind of getting organized as a group, you guys and us, and speaker thing will get going on, you know, next month.
Yep, we'll start our speaker series.
John and I will figure out one or two for the. You know, there'll always probably be one of us, and then whoever speaker's friend is, or something like that.
So somebody said after Kevin O'Leary came to town, this, I don't know if they were joking or serious, but they said, hey, do you think you could get The Rock to come to town?
Oh, gosh.
And then I thought, that's funny, but kind of a challenge. It was like, maybe.
Gosh.
Maybe we can get him into drones and get him on the show.
Hey, there you go. Hey, there's a plateau, The Rock.
You might need a bigger chair, though.
Oh, gosh.
He'll break that one.
Oh, man. I've seen clips of what his diet plan is, and I'm just... bug-eyed at it. Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, I see we got another comment there from Micah Zimmerman. Hashtag Johnny Dak Productions. Hey, Tommy.
That's awesome.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, Micah was our camera guy for all the O'Leary stuff when they came here. So any of the videos you saw, that's him. He's out of Fargo, but he does a lot of ground film.
Micah's an early drone guy like our company and has done well in his space. And, yeah, we need to have Mike on there. Put him down.
All right. Mike Zimmerman. All right. Okay. Hey, what's the best way for people who want to look up more information, how to contact you, social media, websites, Tommy, John, Tommy or John, what would be the best way for people to look up more information for EyeSight and the Hive?
I'm debating throwing my personal email out there, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, you can reach out to me, North Dakota, NorthDacoder at gmail.com. That's my company on the side, but North Dakota, you can find me there.
Get that coding, North Dakota.
North Dakota coding. Yes, yes. Tommy, best way for people to reach out and get a hold of you?
Either through our website or Tommy@EyeSightDrones.com. Either one.
And we got a couple of those websites going, scrolling by on the bottom of the screen there. See EyeSightDrones.com, HiveGF.com, and gosh, well, I think that about wraps it up here. So, there we go. There, yes, yes, I was doing the dramatic pause for our wrap-up music here. Yes, yes. So, stay tuned for more future episodes. You can find us everywhere you find podcasts. Just search Drones, Code, and People. And stay tuned. Bigger, better things ahead. Tommy, John, thank you guys so much.
This has been great.
All right, that puts a wrap for episode 2. Stay tuned. We'll be back here for more bigger and better episodes ahead for Drones, Code, and People. We'll see you next time. Goodbye, everybody.